Good morning and welcome to our session titled Public Health Department Practices to Improve Population Health. I'm Michelle Williams and I'll be the moderator of this session. Our first speaker is going to be Dr. Mark Hart. Dr. Mark Hart is a faculty member in the Department of Behavioral Science and Community Health in the College of Public Health and Health Professions at the University of Florida, go Gators, where he works to develop online course offerings as well as help instructors better integrate technology into their classes and research. Following 17 years as a classroom teacher, administrator, and online instructor, Mark received his doctoral degree in curriculum and instruction, educational technology from the University of Florida in 2012. Dr. Hart also serves as a primary investigator for the Rural South Public Health Training Center, which focuses on educating public health workers working in medically underserved areas, specifically on HIV/AIDS. Dr. Hart has various research interests relating to public health and educational technology. Recent publications have centered on avatar usage, text messaging campaigns, and the role social media can play in formal and informal learning for students and public health workers. Related work has also sought out how to assist public health organizations in selecting, implementing, and evaluating a social networking presence. Dr. Hart.
Thank you. Good morning. Can you guys hear me? Good. I was a intimate group here, but I didn't think anybody would be up at 8 in the morning in New Orleans, so I appreciate that for you all being here. I'm actually new to public health. I've always been from the education side, most recently educational technology. I was a classroom teacher for 15 years at high school, so I'm not really used to anyone looking at me when I talk, so I appreciate it. If you could not. I have nothing to disclose, so I'll move forward. Today, our project relates to a new website that we created. We call it the HIV/AIDS Avatar Project, and it kind of merges these three aspects. It comes through our grant program, the Rural South Public Health Training Center, which I'll speak a little bit about and how we've worked to train public health workers. Then also, kind of to work to discuss a little bit about where HIV/AIDS is in America today. And then obviously this project uses avatars, which we will look at and discuss a little bit how we built it and then what our research angle was for this project. The Rural South Public Health Training Center has actually been around for 3 years. It sounds all nice and official, but people ask where it is. It's just my office. It's an online entity primarily. We offer monthly CE opportunities to train public health workers. We also offer formal classes at the University of Florida, where if they take 5 of them, we offer 2 new certificate programs, one also related to HIV/AIDS, the other one for conditions and public health issues in the rural South in the United States. We also take on a lot of interns. We do collaborative projects in the community. And we're pretty excited for 3 years now. We've been working on a needs assessment where we've been going into, there's 15 would have been dedicated medically underserved counties in the state of Florida. Just a basic medical needs assessment, asking people, what do you think are the biggest health issues in our area? You know, what do you do when you're sick? What blockage do you feel that you have in terms of getting care? So we've been working on this for a few years, and we'll work to publish this soon. We're excited that online and through our courses at the University of Florida, we've trained over 3,000 public health workers in the last 3 years. And through this work, and kind of leading towards this Avatar project, you know, we've learned some things. And one of the reasons I think we've been pretty popular, unfortunately, is that a lot of organizations have been hit with budget issues, budget cuts. We here are lucky today to be at this national conference. Unfortunately, a lot of people who maybe used to do that and get CE or CEU opportunities do not have that anymore. So online training, maybe it's a little bit more attractive than it used to be. We've also noticed in working with various county health departments and organizations that not only is there less opportunity for face-to-face formal training, but that there's also problems or lack of informal training as well. In our county, the Alachua County Health Department, 7 or 8 years ago, they used to have three people who were solely dedicated to HIV and AIDS. You know, today they only have one person. You know, so who does that person talk to? How does that person formally and informally develop themselves professionally? You know, and that's one of the things I'm interested in, use of technology. Maybe are people connecting through social media and such. There's a lot more words than I normally ever put on the screen, but I think when dealing with HIV and AIDS and talking to people, you know, as I deal with it every day in our work, our trainings, our courses, I feel that a lot of people are still, you know, considered to be a major public health issue, but at the same time, you know, we call it the Magic Johnson effect, where a lot of people now see that he's still alive, living a good life. You know, people know that they can live with this now. And obviously, you know, recently with the Ebola situation, you know, various things pop up. And so HIV and AIDS, you know, someone who grew up in the 80s and 90s, you know, slightly maybe moving to the back burner in terms of what gets attention. But when you look at some of these numbers, we still have 35 million people worldwide living with HIV. In 2013 alone, an estimated 2.1 million people were newly infected with HIV worldwide. And if we even just look at that here in the United States, approximately 1.1 million people living with HIV in the United States, one-fifth of those people are estimated to not even know they're infected with HIV and AIDS, and an estimated 50,000 new HIV infections occur in the United States every year. So even perhaps if you want to even quote-unquote call this a manageable disease, you know, obviously it is still growing statistically. Coming from I also have an appointment in the College of Education, and if I were to write a paper on iPads in the classroom, it would be the 10,000th paper on iPads in the classroom. You know, but when I take what I do, educational technology related to public health, it's kind of the Wild West out there. And, you know, so it's interesting if you actually do a search on avatar usage, and this project's related to self-identity, or even avatar usage in public health, there's not a lot of research out there. A lot of research related to avatar usage and who picks what or how it represents themselves has been primarily related to video games. So there's been a few specific studies of that even a few years ago related to that. And even in doing a lot of searching, I didn't find a lot of publications related to avatar usage in public health. Actually, today, if you just type in avatar public health or HIV and avatar, our site's been up for 3 weeks, and we're like the top 10 things on the Google search. So there is an interesting game. I call it a game. It doesn't sound very fun. Related to smoking usage, where you would create your avatar and your age, and then you play the game and smoke, and then you see your avatar actually ages and shows the effects of smoking on you. So that's been kind of powerful. There's also been a study recently, the presentation of self in the online world. And in essence, that study says a lot of what people would already expect, that when people create avatars, they tend to make themselves a little taller than they are, a little thinner than they are, and so on. So some of our work was kind of somewhat related to that. A lot of times I get people, and I have a team of people, we're always building avatars and doing things on Second Life and among other things and technology or social media. And a lot of times people come, you know, why are you even doing this on avatar, or it's weird, or stuff like that. But in my world, it's been incredibly powerful and helpful, especially in creating all these online trainings. You know, if I bring someone out to do a recording and we have that training up, and then, you know, a year later, 2 years later, information changes, I would have to bring that person back out, have them re-record or wear the same clothes or whatever they would do. You know, with an avatar, it's incredibly easy to go in and update and change things. Also, you know, if I record someone doing an educational component, you know, I have that person who is that age, of that demographic, you know, but with an avatar, as we did, I can quickly change their physical looks. With a touch of a button, I can now offer this in multiple languages, dialects, and such. There's also a lot of research that avatars have a built-in motivational effect, or maybe even temporary, where somebody might want to watch a video of an avatar versus a person, though that's debated. Obviously, they're easy to embed. And research, it's nice to work with avatars because they are don't have a lot of variability as well. And one of the things that we're actually starting to look at, too, is specific to avatars and HIV, is that we have some preliminary interesting information that some people, as we look at a topic like HIV and stigma, you know, that people are actually more inclined to ask a question to an avatar that they wouldn't actually ask to a live person. Now, in this study, we are looking at taped avatars, but we also have the ability to do avatars live as well. And as you see here in this picture, we can go beyond even what we did in this study, which is just a picture of a person's face, and we can create environments. We can have people with multiple avatars. We can create a classroom. We could have class on the moon. We can do whatever we wanted to do. So as for this study, I won't exactly take you into how this study came to be, but briefly, we had a person at the Alachua County Health Department who's retiring, and he's always done this talk for 30-some years, 20, 30 years, of people's most common questions about HIV and AIDS, and he came to me, and he's retiring, and he said he wanted to do it, and he wanted to record all these, and maybe we could do them in avatars, and I said, yeah, that's great. I wrote an abstract for APHA. After that, he said, no, I don't really have time to do that. So we actually went out and sought a new partner. And luckily for us, the state of New York, the Department of Health, recently released a new book, The 100 Questions and Answers Most Common to HIV and AIDS. And it's really great because it comes from the perspective of patients can look at it and just get answers. But it's also written in a way for public health workers that the answers are not only the newest accurate information, but it's modeled the way that they should answer the questions for patients and make them feel most comfortable. To build our avatars, and we can do things that are a lot fancier per se, but we used a very basic program called Voki. It's free. Anyone could build an avatar within 30 seconds to a minute. If you kind of look at the top button in the middle, the top column, you pick a person, gender, ethnicity, you can put clothes, sunglasses, accessorize them. If you look in the middle there to give it voice, you can record it with audio from a microphone. You actually phone it in, which is easy. You can do what's really easy that we used, which is just copy and paste. So from that book, you can just copy and paste it in, and the avatar is already synced to it, and we'll say that, or you can upload documents as well. And then once you've built that avatar, you can get an embedding code. You can put it into YouTube. You can publish it in various ways. This is actually our website today. So what we did was, and I'll show you the layout and how we do this. We have four males and four female avatars of the top four ethnicities representing the United States of America today. We also worked a lot on considerations on the layout, you know, whether we didn't want to have just two horizontal lines and everybody would just pick the first person on the top left. So we did try to mix it up a little bit. We also weekly rotate the avatars. Right now they are numbered. It says click for avatar number 8. That's just been something that we did internally as we were linking pages, but we'll remove that as well. So primarily someone would come to this website. They are faced with these 8 avatars. They would select one, and we'll go through how this process works. So they would start at the first page. They would click an avatar, and they would be sent to the second page, which asks gender, ethnicity, and age demographic questions. So just to highlight that, they're just asked these 3 questions after they've already selected the avatar that they wanted, their age, their gender, their ethnicity. And they would just click these 3 things, and then it says voting complete, proceed to the videos, so they have access to everything. We also give them the option that says no thanks, proceed to the videos as well. And we also just, because this was grant funded, we weren't hiding anything, we also put all 800 videos out on YouTube as well, so people do have access to that. So we have these 100 questions and answers multiplied by these 8 avatars, so we've been busy doing that. Once we collect that information, or if they bypass that, they would go to this next page. That's just a table of contents. This is the way it is in the book. So people would be able to see the questions and answers related to these specific topics. Once they click on one, they would be sent to a page like this one on the right. which is all the questions and all the answers. Mostly the videos are 30 seconds to 2 minutes at the most. And again, with avatars, we have the ability next year, if they update the website or the booklet, that we'll be able to easily change it. I did have a video in here, but the internet seems not to be working in here, so we will do that. We've actually been working on this for about 4 months, building all these videos, and you might be surprised. You're like, oh, it's not a lot of information. We released it on Halloween fully, so it's not that long ago. We did advertise this on our website. The University of Florida's advertised it, but most specifically, we partner with the Suwannee River AHEC in Florida, which accredits all our educational opportunities. And on October 31st, they sent out a blast to all the people that have subscribed to their programs or taken them. So we sent out an email to 10,000 people right off the bat when we launched this. As of the 12th, when I had to submit this presentation, we've already had 311 people who have responded to this. Actually, as of today, we're nearing 500. So I think as we move forward, we'll be able to get a lot more data. So what are the results? We didn't overanalyze this, as it's pretty new, but some interesting things have emerged. Of the 311 people who have taken the survey, primarily you'll see that people are 18 to 29, 30 to 49. And then if we look at the columns, you'll see that we have, it does appear to be an abundance of people who are selecting the Caucasian female and the Caucasian male avatars, followed by Latinos, or actually followed by African American, then Latinos, then Asians. If we look at the gender, which I think is kind of interesting, we have almost close to a 50-50 split related to males to females. But we do see that more people select the female avatars, specifically to Caucasians and African Americans. So that's interesting. I think this next slide is actually the one where we see the most connected relationship. So obviously we've had higher percentages of different ethnicities who have participated. But if we look at this and we stratify it out, African Americans of 83 who have participated, they did select African Americans the most within that category. Asians, 31 have participated, they did select the Asian avatar the most. Caucasians as well, and Latino as well. So for all four of these ethnicities, we did find in our preliminary data that they have self-selected an avatar that most represents them. So to the discussion, we have found that there are a lot of people who participated again, younger in age. And the gender, interestingly, we have found, and obviously when we look at this data, the demographics of people who might be related or interested in HIV and AIDS would tend to be more, as we look at people who have HIV and AIDS in America, would tend to be more male, more African American. But then at the same time, we have to mix that with people who would be looking at this as public health workers, and we'd have to consider their demographics as well. Females pick themselves much more related to Caucasian and African Americans, but not Asian and Latino. But again, the strongest connection we've seen today is that ethnicity, that people are potentially selecting their own ethnicity. Obviously, we need to do further data collection and analysis. We can even stratify this out more of, how many 18 to 29-year-old African Americans selected blank, as we'll do that moving forward. I think one of the things that's interesting to me and what this study may or may not help us learn, and we can also do qualitative work down the road, if I'm building a site and I want to use avatars, do I feel or do I need to have an obligation to make one to represent everyone that might want to access that information? And of course, I can attest that it has taken a long time to build these 8 avatars for all this information. So that's that. That's my study. Thank you very much.